Knopf, ne Schnäze, Sövnia, Sulchari, Sveikivs, Gevnach, Nicht, Gröth, Vatestiania, Verlohi.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
Word of mouth.
For word of mouth.
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 I'm Brady Carlson, and this is a special broadcast of Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. Today, Ira Flatow, host of NPR's Talk of the Nation Science Friday, talks about his career as a broadcaster, from his days hosting the PBS program Newton's Apple to his role in the early days of NPR's flagship program All Things Considered. Flatow spoke in front of a sold-out crowd at the University of New Hampshire Memorial Union Building. He talked about the challenges of doing serious science coverage in an area where network television and other media outlets look to entertain more than inform.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You have a gem of a public radio station here and a whole network in the state, New Hampshire Public Radio, and you should appreciate it and support it. I thank you all for coming this evening. I wanted to share with you some of the experiences I have as a science journalist and some of the challenges that we face as science journalists in bringing science to the public. It's not an easy thing to do these days. Science has been under attack on many fronts. I'm going to show you some of the places where it really needs some help and some of the problems that we face. As science journalists, we really are part of a larger world of journalism. And the world of journalism now, a lot of it in the media, if it's not online, a lot of it has to do with cable television, cable talk shows of all kinds. And in casting about for an example of what makes it so difficult to get anything of quality in journalism these days, especially on cable, I came across this video here that I thought I'd play for you. It's called What We Call the News, and if you watch it, it's a little bit dated, it's a few years old, but it is absolutely spot on, as they say, about the problems of bringing science or, in a larger framework, of bringing news to the public, because the people who make the news are not in the news business anymore. They're in the entertainment business.
There was a time not long ago when each and every day at 6 o'clock each evening you knew news was on its way from anchors of integrity and three channels to choose. It's What We Call the News. Then along came cable and a ratings race ensued. Great legends found themselves replaced by blondes with big fake boobs. Debate replaced with punditry and politically skewed. It's What We Call the News.
We interrupt this story which is coming from Iraq.
Yes, you can applaud. That is a state of... That was 4 years ago, and that things have only gotten worse in that time. But even on the serious, this quote, serious newscasts, we're finding it very difficult to find anything of real substance, especially about science. And this is what I'm talking about and what I deal with, science, technology, environmental things. And I get to wonder sometimes about whether the newscast people really care about teaching us about things. I'm going to show you a little clip right here, very short clip. You know who that's, Brian Williams of NBC News. And he's talking about an event where the population of the United States changed to 300 million. It happened a few years ago. There's one little phrase in there I want you to pay attention to. See if you can find it, because I'm going to talk about it, and hopefully it's not an illustration of the future of the news. So I'm going to play that right now.
We are back this Monday night with NBC News In-Depth, an American milestone. It wasn't all that long ago, November 20th of 1967, President Lyndon Johnson was giving a speech at the Commerce Department in Washington. The crowd started to applaud, noticing what was going on behind him. The president turned around just as the huge digital population counter above him, state-of-the-art at the time, cranked the estimated U.S. population to 200 million. A lot of Americans thought we had grown just about as big as we ought to get. But, of course, we didn't stop there. Well, tomorrow morning at 7:46 a.m. Eastern Time, and don't ask us how they estimate it, the U.S. population will click over to 300 million.
Do you know what the news budget of NBC News is? I can't tell you how many tens, hundreds of millions of dollars it is. But they can't figure out how they know that. I mean, I actually TiVo'd this when it was on because I was astounded by watching it. And I switched over to Katie Couric's news at the same time when she was doing the news. And in 30 seconds, they actually explain that it's, you know, it's not the population coming in by birth necessarily. There are people who are dying and leveling it out, people coming from borders in Canada or Mexico. And what's bothersome about this to me as a journalist is that this was done the night before. The next day, NBC on the Today Show went up to a hospital in the Bronx and pulled a random baby out who was born probably around midnight and dubbed that the 300 millionth person. He went on the air again that night and repeated the exact same phrase. And don't ask us how they know this. This is a big company that's very smart. They've been doing the news for ever since there has been the news on radio and television. It's hard to believe they can't figure this out if they wanted to. My fear is that they don't want to figure it out, is that they don't want to tell you how they know this because it's, quote, either too complicated or they want to feel some affinity with the couch potato people who will say, yeah, if they're that stupid, I'd like to watch them, you know? And I don't know if that's true or not. I'm just worrisome that something that simple could be the case, that the problems that we're having, you know, about understanding the news and science in the news is because they just view this as entertainment. And all the news companies in the media are owned by entertainment divisions, you know, Viacom and NBC Universal and Disney. They're in the business of just presenting some fun to you and some facts to you, not really informing you. And they'll tell you that. They'll tell you that that's the job of your high school teacher, is informing you. We're just here to actually be in the entertainment business. And if you think that if you're going to find any help in other things, where other challenges lie, here's another challenge to understanding the news and for we as communicators to bring you the news. And this is a Harris cartoon. If anybody can't read it, put your hand up and I'll read it to you. There's a big formula on the blackboard. And in the middle of the formula, it says, then a miracle occurs. And the caption says, I think you should be more explicit here in step two. I mean, religion has become a lot of the dialogue that goes on in science, and people expect that scientists can explain God or the supernatural or whatever, but that's not what science can do. Science can never talk about that. Science talks about the natural, not the supernatural. So there's another impediment, and sometimes it shows up in what people think about the reality of the world is. A poll of people think 40%, this is a real poll, 40% of the population thinks that the Flintstones were real. In other words, that people and dinosaurs lived at the same time so that, you know, you could ride the back of a dinosaur like they do in Flintstones or have one as a pet. 40% of the population doesn't know how many tens of millions of years there was between when the dinosaurs were wiped out and when humans first came on the Earth. Even some of the smartest people in our society also have trouble with some of the most basic facts of life, basic facts of nature. And I'm going to show you a clip made famous by the Annenberg Project. This was called A Private Universe. It was made in 1989. It was a set of interviews at the commencement ceremonies at Harvard University. Somebody took a camera and put it up there and rounded up all the Harvard graduates of that afternoon and anybody else wearing a cap and gown, I think, for that matter, anybody nearby. And they asked them one simple question. Why is it hotter in the summer than it is in the winter?
Gets nearer to the sun, which produces warmer weather, and gets farther away, which produces colder weather, and hence the seasons.
How hot it is or how cold it is at any given time of the year has to do with the closeness of the Earth to the sun during the seasonal periods.
The Earth goes around the sun, and it gets hotter when we get closer to the sun, and it gets colder when we get farther away from the sun.
These graduates, like many of us, think of the Earth's orbit as a highly exaggerated ellipse. Even though the Earth's orbit is very nearly circular, with distance producing virtually no effect on the seasons, we carry with us the strong, incorrect belief that changing distance is responsible for the seasons.
I took physics, planetary motion, and relativity, and electromagnetism, and waves.
I've never really had a scientific background whatsoever, and I got through school without having it. I've gotten very far without having it.
And that's the problem. You can go for 4 years of Harvard, never take a science course, and think you are a well-rounded student. or you could take planetary physics, motion, whatever, and still not know why it's hotter in the summer than it is in the winter. Of course, we got closest to the sun this year in January was when we were closest to the sun. The answer, of course, lies in something you've all seen as students in grade school with the globe on the desk, because the answer is the Earth is tilted, and that's why we have seasons. And when the tilt of the Earth is pointing at the sun, that pole is pointing at the sun, that's the summer, and when it's pointing away, that's the winter. Of course, the follow-up question could have been, well, why is it summertime in Australia when it's winter up north? But the interesting part about all of this is that science is very popular with the public. The public loves science. This is a poll that asked the public the topics that do not get enough attention in the news. When you watch the news, what topics do not get enough attention? And you can see that it's actually an upside-down graph. I'll show you the bottom line here. The bottom is the most popular answer. 50% of the people said that science news and discoveries do not get enough attention. And people love science. They love to talk about it. Anytime you can give them an excuse to talk about it, they will. We go to college campuses, we go to different places, and we talk about science all the time. It's always been up to individuals in the media who believe in the value of science to create opportunities to bring science to the public, and that's what we do. We try to create opportunities on Science Friday and in different ways now to bring science to the public. Johnny Carson from the old Tonight Show was on for 30 years. He had Carl Sagan on more times than hardly, I think it was over 30 times that he was on the Tonight Show, because he realized his power, and he realized the importance of science, and he realized how much he could, you know, bring science to the public. David Letterman, even, despite his clowning all the time and because of it, appreciated someone who could bring science down to the level of the average person. And this is one of my favorite clips I've ever seen about how to present science to the public, so I thought I would want to share it with you, because whenever I talk about presenting science to the public, I remember Grace Hopper. She was a Navy officer for 43 years. She held the record for the longest-serving naval officer ever, but she was also a computer scientist, and she worked on creating COBOL, computer language, and in fact, in her lab notes, there's actually a moth taken out of a computer. It's under a piece of scotch tape, and she called it a bug, and she took the bug out of the computer, and we don't know that. Maybe the first actual case of someone finding a bug in a computer. Maybe that's where it came from. Right before she retired, she went on the David Letterman show to describe for David some new kind of wording that was entering the vocabulary, something we take for granted now called nano. What is a nano? Nanotechnology, nanoparticles. And David had heard about it, and you'll see how old this piece is, and he asked her about it.
That conjures an image of somebody who has a lot of Tupperware parties somehow.
Well, I could give you a nanosecond.
Okay, now, like I don't even know what that is, Grace.
Well, you see, we started with milliseconds, thousandths of a second, and then we went to microseconds, millionths of a second, and now we talk about nanoseconds. That's a billionth of a second.
Mm-hmm. But
well, they told me billionth of a second, and I didn't know what on earth they were talking about.
Right. It
didn't make sense to me. So one day I called over to engineering and said, cut off a nanosecond, send it over to me. So I've got a bundle of them here, and you can pick your color.
Oh, they come in color. See, I didn't realize that nanoseconds
colors.
Now, in the old days, you only had your choice of white or gray, I think. Now, Gracie, I understand that this is a visual.
That is the maximum distance that light or electricity can travel in a billionth of a second.
No faster, no farther.
And, when an admiral asks you why it takes a damn long to send a message by a satellite, You point out to him that between here and the satellite, there are a very large number of nanoseconds.
You'll never forget what a nanosecond is now after you have seen this, and that is the power of doing a great science demonstration. And I used to do a show called Newton's Apple many years ago where we tried to do all these great science demonstrations, and it's terrific to come up with a great one. Today we have shows where people have realized that the science is very popular. And people want to see science. The Big Bang Theory, actually. Science Friday was put on The Big Bang Theory. We got a call from the producers of The Big Bang Theory, and they said, can you bring Sheldon, the star of The Big Bang Theory, onto Science Friday? And we'll actually recreate an episode of Science Friday for you. So
we'll be here with Ira Fueto from Science Friday next week. Thank you, Kripke, for depriving me of the opportunity to share my news with my friends.
My pleasure.
And we actually went on and Sheldon, I'll just show you a little bit of it.
This is Ira Flatto, and you're listening
to NPR brought Science Friday to the show.
Joining us today by phone from his office in Pasadena,
pumping helium
California.
Into his office so he'll have a
Sheldon
bad voice.
Oh, this is going to be a Wyatt.
Thanks for being with us today, Dr. Cooper.
My pleasure, Ira.
Now, let's talk about magnetic monopoles. Can you explain to our audience just what a monopole is?
Okay, you'll have to find that video online if you want to see the rest of it. So we have discovered that the way to get science to people is not just through the radio program, but through using television, other sources, and new media. And we actually changed our motto, as you saw at the beginning, to Every Day is Science Friday. We want to get science to folks more than just on Fridays, so we do Every Day. And we started out doing podcasts. And in the early days of our podcast, and still true today, our podcasts are very, very popular. Here is one of the first years it was on. We were right behind Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, very close to it. And in fact, if everybody in this room downloads the podcast, we can pass. We can pass that number of downloaded podcasts. And we moved on from there to creating videos. And I want to show you one video that is the most popular video that we call our video pick of the week. This video has been downloaded almost 750,000 times. And we look to scientists to give us raw footage of their experiments, and we turn them into videos, or we go out and shoot our own videos. And I have just time to show you about one of them, and this is the most popular one, and you will be talking about this for a while. I'll just let it talk for itself.
I have to admit I was screaming when I got this video thing.
What makes a marine biologist scream? Roger Hanlon captured this about 10 years ago. He was doing a study in the Caribbean, and he'd been following this octopus for about an hour. When it crept behind the rock and went into camouflage mode, he
jammed the camera down right in its face, so to speak,
prompting it to go from camouflage to a startle defense,
blanching white very quickly.
And then inking him.
But I followed the animal and finished the dive, and I popped at the surface. It was only about 5 feet deep, and I screamed bloody murder, and they thought I was having a dive accident.
When actually he was having...
It was a eureka moment, there's no doubt about it.
Well, you could watch the rest of that online also. We have a science and arts page. We create a whole science and arts section where we put a lot of these videos that interface science and the arts. A lot of science and the arts. We talk about theater, film. We gave a Science Friday bump to a movie that opened a few weeks ago and now is being distributed much more widely because it is on Science Friday. We have created Spanish language section, a whole Spanish language section of science. We also have a social community. We have over 200,000 Twitter members. We tweet every day, all week. We bring in questions to the show via Twitter, and you can see how many we have up there, and that number grows by 1,000 every week. That's what we do now. That's why we're in the business of doing Science Friday and then trying to make it more encompassing, and why we're happy that you have an opportunity here at New Hampshire Public Radio to listen to Science Friday and to talk about it all week long. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with me. We'll have a discussion about it.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Space is filled with a network of wormholes. You might emerge somewhere else in space, somewhere else in time.
The sky calls.
Ira Flatto, host of NPR's Talk of the Nation Science Friday. When we return, I'll ask Ira about taking Science Friday to new platforms like web streaming, Twitter, and even virtual reality. Then he'll take questions from our audience at the University of New Hampshire about the state of science in the news, in the schools, and if anyone can ever replace Mr. Wizard. I'm Brady Carlson. You're listening to a special broadcast of Word of Mouth, a conversation with Ira Flatto from New Hampshire Public Radio.
Of the awesome machinery of nature. I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust. The morning sky.
The brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, it synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
the simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world.